Maine's Political Pulse is made possible by Lee Automalls, featuring the all-electric Nissan Ariya SUV at Lee Nissan in Auburn and Topsom. Learn more at leeauto.com.
You're listening to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Robbie Feinberg, joined by Maine Public State House correspondent Kevin Miller and our chief political correspondent, Steve Missler. We've still got about a month left in the latest legislative session, and that means lawmakers are still working to shape policy that's attempting to tackle some serious consequential issues. They're weighing several gun safety measures put forward in the wake of last fall's mass shooting in Lewiston, as well as a big debate over how to spend Maine's additional state revenues. Kevin, let's start with the debate over Maine's gun laws. Legislative Democrats and Governor Janet Mills have proposed several policies that they say would help reduce gun violence in the state. Give us a quick reminder on this. What are they putting forward?
So there are a couple of repeat issues that have been defeated in past years. Things like requiring gun buyers to wait 72 hours before they can actually take possession of a firearm. And then gun control advocates have also revived a proposed ban on bump stocks and other modifications that basically allow someone to turn a semi-automatic gun into a machine gun. But we're seeing some new proposals as well. Governor Janet Mills wants to require background checks on private gun sales that are advertised. And that's whether that advertisement appears in Uncle Henry's or on one of the popular online gun marketplaces that are out there. And the governor also wants to make it easier for police to take someone into protective custody if they are potentially dangerous but haven't really committed a crime yet. This would allow them to begin the yellow flag process, which we have in Maine, which is where they ask a judge to order a person to temporarily give up their guns.
Yeah, Kevin, lawmakers, they're knee-deep in discussions over these proposals, but the issue of firearms is often pretty politically charged here in Maine. Do you see any of these policies actually getting through the legislature and signed by Governor Mills?
Yeah, well, there's certainly a sense that the Lewiston mass shooting has shifted the dynamic somewhat on guns. Because of Maine's hunting heritage and our high rates of gun ownership, you know, gun control measures that easily pass in left-leaning states typically fail here with bipartisan opposition. But I guess the question now is how much things have shifted since October. I think it's safe to say that a 72-hour waiting period probably still faces an uphill fight. The ban on bump stocks, we'll have to see. Folks may remember that President Trump actually used his executive authority to ban bump stocks back in 2018 after a gunman who had multiple assault rifles equipped with these bump stocks. He killed about nearly 60 people at a music festival in Las Vegas. That federal ban is now before the U.S. Supreme Court. But the fact, I think, that Governor Mills has put forward the background checks bill is significant politically. She's opposed universal background checks in the past because Maine voters rejected such a proposal back in 2016. But this is a more limited expansion. And then there are a lot of people, regardless of their political beliefs, who really feel that Maine's yellow flag law needs to be tweaked to make it easier for police to use because, as we all know, there's been a lot of questions about why the law wasn't used to stop the gunmen in the Lewiston shootings.
And considering that Democrats, they do have control of both chambers and the executive branch, it would seem like they theoretically could push through some of these measures if they all were in agreement. Are there certain issues here that are splitting the party right now?
Yeah, I think if they're all in agreement, that's the big question here. We have seen issues in the past where Democrats, especially in rural parts of the state, have broken off from their more liberal counterparts and have voted against gun measures to defeat them. And I think that's certainly going to be a potential here this time around as well.
Robbie, my sense is that the governor's proposal is probably a safe bet for Democrats politically and electorally. And part of that is because the resistance to her bill appears somewhat limited compared to, say, the three-day waiting period that Kevin mentioned that legislative Democrats are backing, which is guaranteed to run into opposition from gun rights groups. So the committee vote on that bill could be a bit of a bellwether in terms of determining how far Democrats are willing to challenge groups like the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine, which has traditionally had its way in the legislature. And there are certainly Democrats who will support even stronger gun safety measures, but I'm just not sure if they have the numbers to overcome those that Kevin mentioned who are tentative or outright opposed to say nothing of Governor Mills, who has taken a pretty conservative approach here.
Yeah, and overhanging all of this is the special commission that's investigating the Lewiston shootings. Is any of their work going to help to shape what comes out of the legislature?
Well, they are planning to issue an interim report on or by April 1st, so that I suspect that some of what they have may influence the policy discussions here in Maine. The question is, what are they going to recommend? The commission has certainly spent a lot of time talking about the yellow flag law and why that wasn't employed. So that could be part of the recommendations. But I think we'll just have to wait and see. And then we're expecting the commission to come back with a more comprehensive report later in the year, that and whatever their recommendations are in there, that could be taken up in the legislature if they want to come back in a special session later this year, or they could take them up next year.
Yeah, Steve, let's now move on to another big issue that is hanging over this legislative session. That's the governor's supplemental spending plan, which is slowly making its way through the legislature as we speak. You've reported on some controversy over a particular tax that is included in this plan. It is a fee on streaming services like Netflix and Hulu. What's the argument that the governor's making here in pushing for this new tax?
Well, Robbie, it's pretty similar to the argument she made when she pushed for this tax a couple of years ago, and it's the same one made by her predecessor, Republican Governor Paula Page. And it's basically that taxing streaming services is a smart thing to do because it tracks with consumers' spending habits, which have shifted dramatically from cable to physical album sales to streaming services. There's been a huge migration from cable in recent years. According to the Lichtman Research Group, major cable providers like Spectrum and Comcast lost like 1.7 million subscribers just in the second quarter of 2023, while streaming subscriptions to cable TV replacements like YouTube TV continue to trend upward. Meanwhile, physical music album sales accounted for just 11% of all sales in 2023, according to the Recording Industry Association of America. And that 11% was boosted by a resurgence in the sale of vinyl albums, which are objectively awesome, but also probably a temporary trend that won't stop the overall migration to streaming. So what the governor is proposing is taxing streaming services under the state sales tax, which is 5.5%. At the same time, she's shifting the tax on cable providers to the sales tax, which would yield a 0.5% cut. So if this passes, the cable tax will align with this, with the tax on streaming. For the customer, that means paying about $1.10 on a streaming service that costs $20 a month.
Yeah, I've already seen one Republican who has voiced some opposition to this tax. They called it outlandish this week, but it sounds like there is actually some bipartisan agreement around this, right?
Yeah, I'm sure people won't like it, but it's something that Republican and Democratic-led states are doing. Roughly half the states in the union have a streaming tax, and there's some bipartisan consensus that it's actually fair. The Tax Foundation, which is a conservative-leaning outfit, is not opposed to the concept because it taxes consumption. And some Republicans on the Taxation Committee in the Maine legislature actually voted for this proposal. You know, maybe they'll flip when it comes to the floor, but the committee vote indicates that they were at least on board with the concept before their respective caucus leaders decided to oppose it.
And moving on from state politics, let's talk quickly about what's going on in Washington. We're all well aware of the stalled bills in Congress that would supply more aid to Ukraine and also make changes to our border policies here in the U.S. Maine Congressman Jared Golden put forward his own bill a few weeks ago on both of these issues. Where does that bill stand right now?
Well, it's in a bit of a slog, Robbie, to say the least. And part of that is because Golden is effectively competing against Democratic leadership. So what Golden has proposed is a version of the Senate bill you mentioned earlier. It provides aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, and it contains immigration reforms designed to slow the influx of migrants at the southern border. I think Golden's bill, which he's sponsoring with Pennsylvania Republican Brian Fitzpatrick, is actually more restrictive than the Senate bill, and that's because they're trying to attract Republican support. At the same time, Democrats are backing the Senate foreign aid bill that passed with 70 votes and basically just contains the foreign aid package. Now, House Speaker Mike Johnson doesn't want either bill, so Democratic leaders and Golden and Fitzpatrick are trying to bypass him with a process known as a discharge petition. That process would force a vote on either bill if 218 members sign on to bypass the speaker. Golden and Fitzpatrick are well short of that. Roughly a dozen members had signed on as of Thursday, and Democrats had close to 180 signatures for their bill, but that's still well short of the 218 that they need to bypass Johnson.
So yeah, Steve, it seems like any kind of legislation on either of these issues has been stalled or blocked continuously by Republicans, particularly with the pressure that GOP lawmakers are facing from former President Trump during this election year. Do you think there's any way that something could get through both chambers and signed by President Biden?
Well, you're right about that pressure from former President Trump, and it doesn't look good, really, because it seems like the best chance they had was this Senate compromise bill that included foreign aid to Ukraine and a border overhaul component. That bill was drafted by Republicans and Democrats, but as you mentioned, Trump urged Republicans to kill it because he wants to run on immigration against President Biden. Speaker Johnson seems agreeable to that tactic, and he seems just fine blocking aid to Ukraine, which Trump doesn't seem to want either. So it's a minority position among Americans, and it's a minority position in Congress, too. The conventional wisdom is that Ukraine aid would pass in the House if Johnson would only allow a vote on it. But the MAGA hardliners and his caucus just don't want it, and Trump doesn't want it, and so they're effectively controlling the fate of this foreign aid package.
And lastly, Kevin, we do have a bit of election campaign news. It looks like Senator Angus King will likely have at least two opponents this fall. Can you tell us about him?
Right. So today is actually the deadline for party candidates for Congress or the legislature to file their petition signatures to qualify for the June primaries. I'm sure there might be some people who are like, didn't we just have a primary last week? That's true, but that was just a presidential primary. On June 11th, that's when we have the primaries here in Maine for congressional and legislative races. But you asked about Senator King, and yes, so Democrat David Costello of Brunswick filed his signatures for the ballot earlier this week, and Demi Kazunas of Saco plans to file her signatures and her paperwork in Augusta today. Costello, who's a Democrat, he's run for Congress before, but that was about two decades ago, so he's, I'd say, a bit of a political newcomer here in Maine. And then Demi Kazunas was the chairwoman of the Maine Republican Party basically throughout the Trump years until last year, actually.
Do you see either one of those candidates having much of a chance? I mean, Senator King has been in his role for a pretty long time at this point.
Yeah, it's obviously still pretty early, but I think it's safe to say that Senator King is the favorite headed into November. He's won his two previous Senate elections pretty easily. He was governor for 8 years, and he's a fairly middle-of-the-road moderate, and he's enjoyed pretty high approval ratings.
And that was Maine Public Statehouse correspondent Kevin Miller and our chief political correspondent, Steve Missler. Thanks for joining us for Maine's Political Pulse. You can also read the Political Pulse newsletter. Find that online at mainepublic.org/pulse. Our music is by Rob Holt. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon on Maine's Political Pulse.